This is Inside Isla Vista on 91.9 KCSB FM Santa Barbara. I'm Lisa Osborne. Thanks for joining me tonight. Have a packed show for you. There is a new UCSB library exhibit that showcases Isla Vista over the years from 1970 to today. Tonight, you'll hear from the lead curator who put together Isla Vista, Building a Community. Also, with this historic vote in Isla Vista less than a week away on November 8th, the Isla Vista residents who go to the polls are going to determine whether they want to gain more independence over what happens in Isla Vista through the creation of a community services district. A little later in the show, I'll speak with Josh Ortiz from the Daily Nexus, who can talk about what this means. First up tonight, UCSB is hosting some community events in connection with the unveil of the Isla Vista exhibit at the UCSB Library. Alice O'Connor is professor and director of graduate studies in the Department of History at UCSB. She's giving a talk tomorrow night called Democracy Matters, The Road to Self-Governance in Isla Vista. And Professor O'Connor joins me now with a preview of your presentation. Hi, Professor O'Connor. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
Isla Vista has a history of community-based activism, as we see in this exhibit from 1970 through today, even the days of the Vietnam War, there were a lot of protests. What was some of that early activism like?
Well, there was a lot of activism, and a lot of it had to do with curriculum here at UCSB. Some of the most prominent activists were the Black Students Union, who staged a major protest on campus to insist on a curriculum that was more representative, a faculty that was more representative, and a student body that was more representative. That's one example. Same thing, curricular issues were also taken up by the Chicano Students Movement, which was extremely active at UCSB, and UCSB was host to some major meetings that helped to galvanize the Chicano student movement around the country. So those are some examples. The anti-war movement was really galvanizing for a lot of student protests on campus that also was connected to student protests organized around the country. Generally speaking, issues of free speech, also issues of campus governance, were at issue in some of the on-campus activities. And a lot of that spilled over into Isla Vista.
And some of the activism was to bring a teacher, a popular teacher, back who was fired. But in general, did the faculty encourage students to be active in this way?
My guess, again, I'm looking at this as a historian, and my guess is that the faculty, as it would likely be now, was divided on that issue. Think about it. The issue of shared governance in the university is largely about the faculty as well as the administration, and presumably as well as students taking a role in the governance of the university. But the faculty is going to feel threatened at any given moment if the students want to have too much of a say in academic matters. And certainly at that particular point in time when all matters of governance, either by the administration or by the faculty, were coming under challenge by students, including what should be in the curriculum, who should be in the student body, I would imagine a lot of faculty were not happy at all about that challenge.
And Walter Cronkite reported when the Bank of America burned in 1970, that made the big news. How was UC Santa Barbara, as far as its activism goes, compared to other colleges or universities around the country at that time?
Well, UCSB was not necessarily at all known as a kind of a hotbed of student activism at the time. I mean, much more prominent in both the public imagination and in terms of the leadership of organizing around the country, University of Michigan was very big. I mean, that was the home, if you will, of a famous statement written at the founding of the Students for a Democratic Society, known as the Port Huron Statement. Berkeley in the UC system was very prominent. Thought of, and you know, for a very good reason, as the home of the free speech movement, starting earlier in the 1960s. And UCSB, first of all, the campus was much newer. than other campuses. It was smaller than other campuses, and it was just not as much on the radar screen, despite the fact that there was quite a bit of organizing going on.
So once we got beyond 1970, the early 70s, what are some other, were there other big student protests? Just in the last year or two, we've seen the Million Student March over high tuitions, but are there any other real notable events over the years?
Well, I think whether they express themselves as mass protests or not, there was a lot of student activism around environmentalism. Of course, the environmentalist movement was very prominent and important throughout Santa Barbara. There was a lot of organizing around it because of the oil spill.
Some say it began here. This is what inspired the first Earth Day?
The first Earth Day, and again, a lot of organizing around the issue of offshore drilling, but that actually links to a whole lot of other issues around our reliance on carbon-based energy, among other things, but also just the idea that people need to have a say, and the quality of the environment is a legitimate political issue and something to organize around. And by quality of life, I'm not just talking about, sort of vague lifestyle issues. I mean, what is the environment like, and what is our responsibility as, stewards of the environment, and what kind of a world do we want to live in? So there was a lot of organizing around that. That was really part of I think an important part of the sensibility that was behind some of the organizing in Isla Vista around questions of self-governance.
Speaking of quality of life, Professor Alice O'Connor, you teach and write about poverty and wealth at UCSB, and new research from the County Health Department finds that 87% of Isla Vista residents are living in poverty. What does it mean to a community when so many residents are low income?
Well, I think that's a great point, and I'm glad you kind of put it in the context of quality of life, because so often when we talk about the problem of poverty or low income or economic insecurity, we focus on individuals, or we focus on households, and we talk about how, they don't have enough income, or often we end up blaming individuals. I think what we need to be doing is reframing the whole issue of poverty as first of all, a societal issue, but a deep-seated community issue as well, because the entire community experiences economic need when one among us, and certainly when so many among us, are suffering from economic insecurity. So quality of life issues come up when we're asking all sorts of questions about governance. How do we reshape our economic system so it's more supportive and more cognizant of the needs of everyone who lives here?
Tomorrow night at the UCSB Library, 5 o'clock, you're talking about Democracy Matters on the Road to Self-Governance in Isla Vista. The community is welcome to attend. So what's at stake for voters on Tuesday as they decide upon the community services district? Why does this matter now?
It matters a lot. This is an incredible moment. There's been a tremendous amount of organizing behind it. And in a lot of ways, it does tap into issues that have beset. I don't want to say plagued Isla Vista. I want to say they've beset. They've challenged Isla Vista for most of its history. And they do have to do with self-governance, but they also have to do with the capacity for economic planning. They have to do with things like the capacity to have some say over quality of life. They have to do with some actually nuts and bolts things like infrastructure, lighting. That's been a big issue. It's especially a big issue among my students. But this all speaks to the larger question of how does a community come together to set its own priorities? And how does a community come together to also take responsibility for following through on those priorities? Isla Vista, for most of its history, hasn't had the governing capacity to be able to have both the debates, set the priorities, do some of the hard organizing that it would take to actually set an agenda and follow through on it. So this is about creating the kind of structural and institutional conditions within which Isla Vistans can do some really hard work to come together to solve some problems that have been around for a really long time. I think it's also important because this is a battle people have been fighting for quite a while, and they, you know, partly in response to changes that have happened in the community recently, but again, also in response to long-standing and unresolved issues, they've come together in a really impressive way, at least at the very least, to have the debate and put the issues on the table.
So it's an exciting time.
It's
we look
very exciting
forward
time.
To Tuesday and your talk tomorrow night. And then for Parents Weekend, this weekend you're going to be giving another presentation. You want to just talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, it's Parents Weekend. I think parents are probably starting to arrive pretty soon. There are events all around campus, but among other things, the History Department is going to be hosting a panel called Politics and Protest. And it's a way of acknowledging and historicizing some very important things that are happening in politics today. We're not entirely going to avoid talking about the presidential election, but we want to draw attention to other dimensions of the politics of protest. So our presentation is going to focus on understanding the Black Lives Matter movement in historical perspective, the long history of African American activism in the United States. We'll have another speaker talking about the Fight for 15, also as part of long-standing historical currents. And as part of that, I'm also going to be talking about Isla Vista, you know, kind of framing it as part of this longer history of the politics of protest. So that should be a great discussion. And those of you who have parents visiting, you know, come and bring them, because we're always put a big emphasis on how impressed we are with our students. And so we'll tell your parents that you're really smart. But also, it's a chance, you know, for us to get to know the parents and the parents to get to know us. But everyone is welcome. It's open to the public. It's going to be in HSSB 6020, and that's the IHC, the McCune Conference Room. It starts at 4 o'clock and goes to about 6 o'clock. You know, if you can't stay the whole time, just come for part of it and join the conversation.
On Saturday or Sunday?
This is actually on Friday. I'm sorry. Friday.
Oh, wonderful.
Friday afternoon.
From 4 to
4
6.
O'clock to 6 o'clock, IHC Conference Room, which is the sixth floor of the HSSB building, Humanities and Social Sciences building, and it's called Politics and Protest.
And it's located near the Thunderdome, so parking 22 or 29 if you're going to be coming from off campus. Professor Alice O'Connor, thank you so much for joining us
today.
On Inside
Isla
Vista. Sure. This is Inside Isla Vista on 91.9 FM, KCSB. I'm Lisa Osborne. I just wanted to let you know, a programming note, on Friday at 5 o'clock, KCSB is going to be re-airing the 3rd District Supervisor debate that we presented at Isla Vista Theater 2. A panel of student journalists from KCSB News, The Bottom Line, and The Daily Nexus pose questions to candidates Joan Hartman and Bruce Porter, and you can hear it all right here as you're driving home from work Friday night at 5 o'clock here on 91.9 FM KCSB. You can also listen to it in its entirety on KCSB SoundCloud. Go to soundcloud.com and search KCSB FM. There's a new exhibit about Isla Vista, Building a Community, 1970 to 2016 at the UCSB Library now, and Danelle Moon was the curator of this exhibit and put it together. So can you talk a little bit about the background and what went into putting this together?
Sure. Actually, it's co-curated by several members of my staff, and so I'm just the head point of the organizational process of that. But we had a planning committee that involved several people in the library, including our outreach department. And then we also collaborated with Alice O'Connor in history to see how we might actually put together an exhibit that would really be reflective of the community building in Isla Vista. So part of the initial story starts with the spark of the 1970 riot movement that was very active on campus at that time here, as well as across the United States, in terms of protest movements against the war in Vietnam, the draft. But here it actually had more, it started with a real localized sort of issue relating to the non-tenured process of a very popular anthropology professor who was not tenured, and then the students basically protested the lack of transparency in the administration in sharing their, having some decision-making process in that, which they would never have had that process necessarily, but it was an important protest against a very conservative administration at that time in reflection to the very liberalized sort of student population.
And it led, and this went on over a period of months. There's a there's a movie out that talks about that led up to the burning of the Bank of America.
Correct.
And I had heard about it, as a lot of people had, but I didn't realize that the protest went on for so many months. What was day-to-day life like on campus when this was going on?
I think the campus was, it was fairly disruptive. There was a lot of law enforcement, you know, UPD were involved as well as the Sheriff's Department. And so the university was purposely trying to prohibit certain radicals from coming to campus to create more, you know, conflict on campus. And so the students just took it to Isla Vista. And so Jerry Rubens was one of the activists who was actually one of the convicted felons in the Chicago 8 incident, which was basically where several activists basically set on, tried to bomb the Democratic Convention in Chicago in 1969, and he was convicted. But he was also a big activist protester across the nation, and so we had his defense attorney, William Kunstler, was allowed to come and talk about civil rights issues, but when they tried to bring Jerry Rubin to campus, he was barred from entering, and so the students basically took over Isla Vista, took the protest to the streets of Isla Vista and to the shore. And so some of the images that are represented in the exhibit include an image of Jerry Rubin's coming in on a boat and making this very dramatic sort of, you know, entrance to Isla Vista. So it was an important, placeholder in terms of creating a lot of agitation that pretty much exploded between February of 1970 and didn't fully end until the end of December of that year. There were three major riots that took place between February, I want to say April and May, and the largest one ended in June. But it was one of the biggest issues that took place was that law enforcement was called in. Ronald Reagan, the governor at the time, was very anti-college students, very anti-UC at that time. And basically, one of the statements that he made that's very popular, popularly restated, which we've done here, is he stated, if it takes a bloodbath, let's get it over with, no more appeasement. And so what he did, in terms of how he approached Isla Vista, was he called in the 600 National Guardsmen. You have to remember, this took place right after the massacre at Kent State and Jackson State. And so a lot of this angst was really being spun from a lot of those other events. The conflict of the ROTC and the whole recruiting of students to, you know, join up to fight the Vietnam War was part of the underlying tensions that came in. And so what happened in Isla Vista that was different from other UC campuses and other CSU campuses was that Isla Vista is a very small, densely populated, largely student population, and the law enforcement just came in really heavy-handed. They brought in helicopters, were dropping canisters of tear gas.
And from Los Angeles, there was an elite squad from Los Angeles that came up.
Yes.
And really wreaked terror to where that squad was disbanded following what happened.
Exactly, including the Santa Barbara Sheriff's Department was involved, the UPTPD was involved, the University Police. But the Los Angeles police force that came in, the special forces, and then the sheer number of guardsmen who came in. So there were 600 guardsmen who descended on this 0.5 acre of land where all these young people were living amongst a residential population. And so one of the things that is important for people to think about is that it wasn't just against the students that they were, and some of these books that have been written, like this one, Playing in the Apocalypse by Kate Cummings, she tells her story about what it was like living in Isla Vista at that time. And it was like living in an apocalypse for the people that lived there, because it was like a war zone, basically. And children were being, you know, burnt by the bullets coming down from the tear gas, you know, and the fires, and animals were burnt and all of these things. So it was, I think one of the things to remember is that Isla Vista was always a residential community first before it became a real college community, though the college community is certainly, you know, really impacted kind of that
the growth.
The growth and just, you know, it's also an unincorporated area in California, one of the largest unincorporated urban population in California. And as a result, it doesn't have all of the, it doesn't have a city council, it doesn't have self-governance opportunities. And it was pretty much neglected between the UC Regents, UC Santa Barbara, and then the county government in terms of bringing the appropriate funding to produce the, you know, adequate housing for the student population, and then to have a better town gown relationship with a city, which they were much better at doing in UC San Diego, which formed around the same time, had the same population growth, but San Diego was an incorporated city, so they weren't working within this unincorporated sort of identity.
And hasn't the university kind of their interest in overseeing what happens in Isla Vista, has it ebbed and flowed over the years?
It has, and I think they did, after the riots in 1970, they really put together this report to try and address what has happened here and how can we make some changes, what are some of the issues that need to be addressed. And all of the same issues that were identified in what was called the TRO report in 1971 basically is the same exact information that was re-reported in 2014. So basically there's no housing control. It's basically a slumlord sort of housing environment. The students are packed in like rats in some of the housing. They also don't have the opportunity. They're not actually governed by the university because they're not student housing that's owned by the university. And so I think part of the control issue has been that the university never bought up Isla Vista until much later.
Now, so there's incredible photographs, as you said, that Jerry Rubin coming in on the boat there off the shores Del Playa. This tear gas mask that was used by students or law enforcement at the time?
Well, ironically, during the period, it was used by law enforcement, but there were a lot of college campuses at the time that were promoting the pollution issues in California. So it was not uncommon to see students wearing gas masks because they weren't really, it wasn't about this protest. It was about the problem with smog in the big cities in California.
So it came in handy when the tear gas started pulling.
Yeah, and this is not actually a historical representation from what happened in Isla Vista. It's just one that we purchased just to kind of highlight what an actual gas mask look like.
Well, you have the actual photos of protesters, the Nixon Stop War with the swastika for the X.
Yeah, those were very common across college campuses and particularly in California.
Well, Danelle Moon, you're giving a lot of Santa Barbara area residents a reason to come to UCSB and to Isla Vista to see this wonderful exhibit at the UCSB Library. You've headed up this collaborative effort of bringing out your special collections to show to the public. So again, give us the hours one more time, and it runs through early March.
Right. Our hours are Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. We're open till 8 o'clock on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And the other thing to note to the listeners is that we are in a new library facility, which is state of the art.
Oh, it's beautiful. And it opened just last year.
Right. And so this is an opportunity to also see our new campus design and see how the library has become this really home away from home for our students and provides a really safe environment for them to study, including 24/7 study hours during the quarter. So we're really happy that we have this facility, and we also have the ability to accommodate bringing in these types of collections because we have the appropriate level of staffing and a facility that actually preserves the materials appropriately.
And the web address for the library for more information is library.ucsb.edu, and you can find out about the Isla Vista Building a Community 1970 to 2016 exhibit. Danelle Moon, you did a wonderful job with pulling this all together.
Oh, thanks. I think it was a community of people that helped bring it together, so I think it's really representative of what we're trying to do in terms of building Isla Vista into the beloved community that has just begun. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for showing us around, and you can catch this again until early March and be listening to Inside Isla Vista for more events that could be taking place here. We'll definitely be promoting it. I'm Lisa Osborne. This is Inside Isla Vista on 91.9 FM KCSB. I'm Lisa Osborne. The elections are less than a week away, and on November 8th, Isla Vista votes voters are going to have the opportunity to create more independence in their neighborhood with the creation of a community services district. Measures E and F are on the ballot, and if both of those pass, a community services district will be formed. Josh Ortiz is county news editor for the Daily Nexus here at UCSB. So we wanted to take a closer look at what Isla Vista voters are going to be deciding upon on Tuesday. Hi, Josh.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for being here. You've been covering this election and Measures E and F for months with the Daily Nexus. So.
Yeah, it's an exciting time.
Yeah. What is it? What's the temperature out there, the climate? Does it seem like Measures E and F are going to pass? Isla Vista's tried in the past to become more independent, and it's never worked. What about this year?
Yeah, I'd say the temperature is hot. I think people are very interested. We see record voter registration. It leaves us to question whether there'll be record voter turnout. So a lot of people are interested, a lot of students pushing forward the Yes on ENF campaign.
There are posters all over campus now, stuck in the grass. When I came on campus today, I see that they're really getting out the message on these final days before the campaign. And before we get into Measures E and F and what each one is, you reported for the Daily Nexus that there was a huge goal for signing up new voters in Isla Vista and on campus here at UCSB. And those who were registering voters actually hit their mark, didn't they?
Yeah, they were going for 13,000 in the past. They've done 11,000. But this year they hit 13,000, about 2,000 more voters registered for the November election.
And that's incredible because most of these voters signed up after the June primaries, right?
Yeah, about 11,000 of them signed up after June.
That's amazing. Yeah. That is quite a goal that they achieved. So Isla Vista voters seem to be on fire. So hopefully they make it to the polls. No late night parties, okay, in Isla Vista the night before the elections.
Yeah.
Just so everyone can get out and vote, right? So Measures E and F, what are they?
Fairly straightforward. If passed, Measure E will create a community services district as a form of local government over Isla Vista. A community services district is a special district that provides 8 different types of services, including tenant-landlord mediation, graffiti abatements, community policing. Measure F, if passed, will give the proposed CSD the power to levy a utility user tax to partially fund CSD services. It'll give it about $500,000 a year, and that's on top of the $200,000 a year that UCSB has already pledged for the CSD.
So this utility users tax is going to be on certain utilities, not all of them, I don't think. I don't think it's on the
About
phone
most
bill,
of them.
The
it's
cable.
Your garbage, electricity, water. Yeah, about almost all your utilities. The Yes on ENF campaign, people say it'll be about $5 to $10 a month on top of everything else you pay for.
One is needed to fund the other, right? You can't vote yes on E and no on F to make this work, right?
Yeah.
Because you need the money needs to be there in order to create the community services district.
Technically, E can be passed without F. If F is not passed, the CSD just won't have as much funding and most likely won't be able to fund most of its services that it hopes to do. But, you know, Yes on E and F campaign, people are saying that F needs to pass in order for the CSD to have any sort of, you know, ability to do anything.
And voters are also going to be deciding on board members for this community services district. So you'll be voting for board members. There is an effort that's opposed to Measure E and F, and it came in late, only in the last month or two, where property owners have organized and they're putting out a message that's against E and F. And why is that?
Their deal is that they think that higher taxes will make it higher living costs for their renters. Higher costs will deter renters from leasing their units, and competitive living situation that Isla Vista is, property owners believe that, you know, they'll lose customers basically if the prices are raised.
Which doesn't really make sense because the rental occupancy rate in Santa Barbara, let alone Isla Vista, is so low. It's like a fraction. So
yeah.
There's not.
I was told by the Isla Vista Tenants Union that the vacancy rate is lower in Isla Vista than in New York City.
That's Josh Ortiz, County News Editor with the Daily Nexus. I'm Lisa Osborne. Thanks so much for joining us today. If you want to catch up on past episodes of Inside Isla Vista, go to SoundCloud.com, search KCSB-FM, and you'll find all of the Inside Isla Vista episodes in one playlist. Inside Isla Vista is a production of KCSB News. It comes your way Wednesday nights at 5 o'clock. We feature different hosts and different guests each week, so you never know what you're going to get. But you do know that you're going to learn more about Isla Vista and what's happening here when you tune in Wednesday nights at 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening to 91.9 FM KCSB.